Welcome the members. Thank you for showing up. This is the most anticipated committee of the day. And I don't know, some didn't. Well, they're coming. That's good. We first of all want to thank the University of Minnesota for being here, and we have other folks coming coming up second here from Minnesota State. But I want to point out that there's some snacks going around here. I guess it's to be pointed out that it's from the University of Minnesota. And just a member, caution to members, it has to get back to the chair without being empty. So looks like there's plenty. So thank you very much for that nice gesture.
You're welcome.
And at this time of the day, it's really nice to have a little break. No, normally we take a nap. But,
hard to fall asleep while you're chewing.
It is. Chair. This is very helpful, you bet. So before we begin hearing from our testifiers today, we'll take a look at the minutes from, this would be February 28th. And do I have a motion to approve?
Mr. Chair, I make a motion.
All right. Now you can eat. Any questions, corrections? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good. It's a little muffled, but minutes are approved. All right. We're looking forward to our presentations today. It's just always good to see you here, President Kaler and the group that come with you. So I guess without any further delay, I would like to ask President Kaler to begin the presentation from the University of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have brought a shovel to the Capitol State Office building today because we're excited to start building. My name, for the record, is Eric Kaler. It's my privilege and honor to serve as president of the University of Minnesota, and we're ready to get shovels like this into the ground. And I know that Regent Patty Simmons, who is with us today, agrees with me on that. But first, a thank you. You and your colleagues have invested in the university for years, and we have worked together to create a great R1 research university that serves the people in the state of Minnesota, and we're thankful for your support. Our capital request this year is all about renewal of our aging facilities on the Crookston, Duluth, Morris, and Twin Cities campuses. There are no new shiny objects in this request. Our request is focused on renovating, restoring, and reimagining the oldest pieces of our 29 million square feet of space across our system. It's about safety, reliability, energy efficiency, and accessibility. But really, at its core, our capital request this session is about transforming our facilities, some of them built in the 19th century, into 21st century places of teaching, learning, and research for our students and our faculty. And it's about preparing our state's workforce in up-to-date facilities. You'll be hearing today from students and faculty about our HEPR, Greater Minnesota Academic Renewal, Pillsbury Hall, and Glenn Sheen requests. Please allow me just a few minutes to provide an overview of our requests, and then our students and faculty will provide more details. Our top priority, as always, is HEPR funding. And I have this shovel here because many of the 174 projects in the 109 different buildings we've identified for HEPR funding are ready to go. That's been our track record, and we usually have hundreds of projects underway, so we have the capacity to deliver on this $200 million HEPR request. 99% of the HEPR funds the legislature invested in the university between 2012 and 2015 have been spent. And about 70% of the 2017 HEPR funds have been spent or encumbered, with the remaining 30% obligated to complete projects that are already underway. So I can assure you with confidence that within 24 months of any 2018 funding, we'd have our HEPR money spent or in construction, and that shovel would be ready to come back out of the ground and back into the garage. Our second priority is the Greater Minnesota Academic Renewal Request. This is about renewing obsolete spaces in a total of 5 buildings on our Crookston, Duluth, and Morris campuses. And our Morris students are here today to explain the impact on them. Our third priority is Pillsbury Hall, smack dab in the middle of our Twin Cities campus. The building is 129 years old and needs to be renewed to accommodate 6,000 of our humanities students. Are other priorities a facelift for Glen Sheen, which would be a big lift to UMD's outreach mission as thousands of visitors each year will learn about the history of Duluth? Again, our request is all about renewal and about responsibly building on the investments that past legislators have made so that our facilities remain safe and up to date for students and faculty for decades to come. So thank you again, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, and I'd now like to invite, with your permission, Associate Professor of Dairy Products Technology, Tonya Schoenfuss, and one of our outstanding students, Max Hurst, to the table to tell you more about our HEPA request.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, President Kaler.
Hello, I'm Tonya Schoenfuss. I'm a professor in the Department of Food Science and Nutrition. So I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to address you and tell you a little bit about HEPA and how it would benefit just one of the 70 buildings that HEPA funds would be benefiting. So I am a professor in food science, but I'm also the faculty advisor for the Joe Ortheson Food Processing Facility, which is the facility where the cheese was made. So I'll mention a little more about that later. In food science and nutrition, we have 26 faculty, and we have 125 graduate students and 500 undergrads in our program. So we're educating the future workforce of Minnesota in food processing, but then also nutrition and health. And we do research in nutrition sciences and food sciences. A key facility for the innovation that work that we do is the pilot plant. It's truly a multi-use facility. We have students in there for classes, and they also get part-time employment for doing things like making dairy products, but then also working with companies who come in to pay to use the facility. So we're an innovation center for local companies where they're developing new ingredients and new processes. And then also we have companies that start up in our facility before they're able to manufacture in their own. So companies like Redhead Creamery and Cannon Bells. Cannon Bells is making all their cheese in our plant right now while they try to get the funding to build their plant in Cannon Falls. We also produce ice cream and the cheese that you see on the platter. It helps to fund our facilities and our staff. So how will HEPA funds help us? The building, it was constructed in 1956, so it's outdated. So it's lacking some very important safety and accessibility features. So first and foremost, fire sprinklers are part of the project, as well as handicap accessible restrooms. We don't have any right now, and we have a 220-room classroom in our building. The most pressing issues, though, from my perspective, are that we lack the ability to install modern analytical and plant equipment, and our data and our analytical research is suffering because of the state of the building. This is mainly due to two things. We lack electrical capacity and type to install new modern equipment, and when we are able to add to the electrical capacity, we usually have to pay to run lines and install transformers. So it's not sustainable. So we need a renovation of that. And then we also don't have air conditioning to many of the labs or the entire pilot plant. So this affects our data and our ability to get good data from our research. We can't control the environment, so it's hard to make product consistently. It damages our analytical equipment and the reagents as we're trying to do our tests. We can't install equipment that adds to the heat load, so things like freezers add to the heat, so it becomes very unbearable in some of our labs when we do that. And it's just hard to work in, so it's not great for our staff and our students to try to work in that sort of environment in the summer. And lastly, it can cause sanitary issues in the plant as well. We don't have control over the air supply, so we could use an improved filtration and stuff so that we have a modern food facility and sanitary food facility. So that's just one of the stories for, I'm sure there's many more for every building on the across the campuses that the HEPA funds will help. And I hope you'll consider supporting continued renovation on the campuses.
Thank you very much. We have a student here to add to your testimony.
Yes, sir. For the record, my name is Max Hurst. Thank you, Mr. Chair and honorable members of the committee for having us here today. I'm a junior studying political science and minoring in business law at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus. There I currently serve as the Government and Legislative Affairs Director for the Minnesota Student Association undergraduate student government on the Twin Cities campus. I'm an out-of-state student, actually, from Aurora, Illinois, home of Wayne's World, for those that are familiar. Towards the end of my high school career, I remember being asked by my neighbors and teachers where it was I was going to college. I would announce proudly that I was attending the University of Minnesota and that I was going to be a Golden Gopher. And I'd often be met with the response, you know, it's cold up there. Now, those that knew a little bit more about the U would also say, that's great, they have a beautiful campus. I guess most of them didn't know that we were also a top-tier research institution or that we have five wonderful campuses in every part of Minnesota. Still, I would have to agree with them. I remember visiting the university for the first time, and I was captivated by its beauty and impressed by the spaces for students to learn, study, and discover. It was important to me, as it's important to all students, to have the opportunity to learn and research in the best facilities at my home university. It's one of the reasons why I and so many other students come to Minnesota to study. So when I started classes at the U, I was a bit surprised in seeing many of our buildings in need of maintenance and repair. Whether that be a leak in the basement of Walter Library while studying, or a ceiling falling apart in a tunnel on my way to class. For these and many other fixes, the university is requesting the legislature to fund this $200 million request for HEPR. Now, that's no small change, so it's important for us to recognize what HEPR is and why us as students support it. HEPR is improving safety measures, fixing up fire alarms and sprinkler systems to make sure that students, faculty, and staff are safe. HEPR is replacing windows and improving HVAC systems to make classrooms and lecture halls better learning environments for students so they can focus on course material instead of that drafty window or uncomfortable heat. HEPR is making our institutions more accessible by fixing up elevators and updating restrooms so students with disabilities can use them with ease. HEPR is doing the small things, like fixing leaky roofs and putting our brick buildings so we can proudly show off our institution that puts Minnesota above the rest. Now, HEPR is an investment in our future. We like to say HEPR is cheaper because by making these improvements now, we can stave off the need for greater, more expensive repairs that come from neglecting to act. It's just a plain, smart economic move. This isn't the tenant coming to the landlord asking for a hot tub insulation and heated bathroom floors. We're letting you know that the roof is leaking, the AC is on the fritz, the windows are broken, and if we get them all fixed up, the current tenants will be happy, prospective tenants will be quicker to sign their lease, and the property will stay a proud, valuable asset to the owner. It's a win-win. So we have a tendency to focus on the new. It's exciting to implement a new system or policy or build a new building or civic structure. We often forget that maintenance is just as essential. Like personal hygiene, we don't like talking about it, but everybody in the room can tell when you're not doing it. Supporting the U is a smart decision for our state's future. It attracts top students from across the country and the world to Minnesota, providing unique perspectives, bringing new ideas, and contributing to our state in profound ways. Over 4 years, students conduct groundbreaking research, gain experience in Minnesota's workforce, or like me, advocate for Minnesotans at all levels of government. And they will continue to contribute to Minnesota after graduation. Most of these students will remain in Minnesota to work and live. Inevitably, it happens to all of us, we become Minnesotans. So with that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I implore you all to continue our state's long tradition of support for our flagship institution across all five of our campuses, funding HEPR across the university to serve students, stakeholders in our state. Again, I appreciate this opportunity to speak to you all this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hurst. We can take questions, I think, as we go along here, if there are any. You said you're from Aurora?
Yes, sir.
I know where that is. Outside of Chicago, right?
Yep.
You almost get, yeah. So when you graduate, and when will that be?
Next year.
Next year. We'll put you on the spot. Are you going to stay in Minnesota?
Yes, sir. I'm hoping to.
That's what I wanted to. That's what I was hoping you'd say, because that's
me too.
We hear that. Once we get you here, you'll stay, and we appreciate that very much. And your line of study, just
political science with a minor in business law. I'm on that pre-law track. Yeah.
All right. We need more lawyers. I think, right? That's good. Glad to have you here testifying at the University of Minnesota. Appreciate it very much. Any questions of members? Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, my question is to you. What are we going to be doing with this information as a committee?
What are we going to do with it?
What are we going to be doing with it? For instance, are we going to be making a recommendation to the Capital Investment Committee from this committee of the requests by Minn State and the University of Minnesota?
We will pass it on to that committee, correct.
Mr. Chair, I don't think you quite understood my question. So we're passing the totality of what they're presenting today to the committee, or are we going to take a look at all of the information and then select a request that this committee will pass as a recommendation to be passed by the Capital Investment Committee?
I don't think in the past we've spent a lot of time, you know, going through and determining what our priorities are. I think my plan would be to move it on
Mr. Chair,
in its entirety as requested.
There was a time when we did do that. When we took a look at these requests, we then, as a committee, made a decision on what our priorities would be as the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee. And I ask it because next hearing, you have selected bills up that deal with capital projects. Are we going to take action on those bills?
We'll look at them one at a time.
Well, Mr. Chair, again, that's not exactly the answer. Are we going to take action on selected members' capital project bills and say we're saying yes or no to those particular projects and passing them to the Capital Investment Committee? Or are we just hearing them?
What's that? Yeah. So we're going to hear them and then make a decision on what we recommend.
So, Mr. Chair, we'll be hearing then all bills of members of this committee that have introduced capital projects.
I think that's the decision we have to make yet. But in the past, that's the way I've operated this committee, and then go from there.
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to seek clarity.
I understand.
And hopefully, if we are going to be making these decisions, then it does add a different process to the committee, and there will be choices. For instance, rank order, and we've had this discussion with the president before on ordering of projects. So I would hope if we are going to make a recommendation to the Capital Investment Committee, it will be the totality of the projects of higher ed of Minn State and the University of Minnesota, and that we would also in that consideration rank order.
I think it's been very rare that we've made many changes in that rank order. But it's not impossible. We do have that authority to do that.
I think it's been rare under one particular type of leadership of the House. It hasn't been that rare under other type of leaderships right. of the House.
Well, we're under one type now.
I realize that, and I am just saying that there's another way to do it. Otherwise, we're just hearing things with no purpose.
Well, we think we do have a purpose, but time will tell.
Well, I'm trying to discover what the purpose is, Mr.
Plowski. There are other people in this decision process, too, before we get to May, so that's part of the deal. If there are no other questions, then we'll be Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Kaler and to the testifiers. So I'm looking at the spreadsheet for HEPR, and I do want to articulate something that Representative Plowski kind of hit on. This is a very extensive list, and I'm being respectful of a candidate in terms of how are we to know, based upon your presentation, which one of these, or in their totality, are all of these mission-critical expenditures or investments, if you will, on each one of these campuses, and to Representative Pulowski's suggestion about a rank order, are they in the order in which you have prioritized them based upon the number that they show up in order on each campus?
President Kaler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, that's a great question. Thank you. This list is the $200 million request list. And so at the $200 million level, we would do everything on the sheets that you have in front of you. Should we be in receipt of less than $200 million, we create a different list that addresses the important projects, but that will fit under the dollar amount that is there. So these, in that sense, are not in a priority list in the sense that you would take the bottom number, Project 187, and assume that if we only received $198.1 million, that would be the project we would not do. We would consider whether we should do many smaller ones, one bigger one, et cetera. So it's a iterative process. In the past, that's not always a real satisfactory answer because all of us, I think, would say, well, we'll just rank order these. But it's important to understand, for example, that we wouldn't use an enormous fraction of a HEPR number on one project when we had many other small and also important projects to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So maybe to add on to that, President, irregardless of whatever funding that you might receive in consideration of the HEPR request, if we're just talking about that, and I do want to go back to what Representative Pawlowski mentioned, how are we to know, based upon this list, which ones are the most mission-critical projects that either sustain a building, sustain a curriculum that is housed in that building, or otherwise? How are we to know without some type of inference from you or your staff in terms of what is the most mission-critical order, either by campus or overall, that will tell us, in the event that the full and complete authorization or appropriation is not fulfilled, where do the priorities lie?
President McKeever.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, what we have done in the past is provided to this committee and your companions in the Senate a list that does do that for a smaller targeted number. So we can window that down as we begin to close in on what a number might look like so that you would be able to see between choices of projects in and out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, let's move on. We have another student, I believe.
We have, Mr. Chair, we have three students, all who have journeyed this morning from Morris and will return this evening in order to tell you about the importance of the greater Minnesota Academic Renewal Projects. They are on, as I mentioned, Duluth, Crookston, and Morris campuses, and today you're going to hear from three of our great students about what we would do on Morris. So, friends.
Who's up first?
I will be.
Okay. Please identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Yes. Hello. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, House Representatives, for hearing us today. My name is Autumn Johnson, and I'm a second-year political science student from East Bethel, Minnesota, and I'm attending the University of Minnesota Morris. Morris is an affordable, innovative liberal arts college with a very close-knit community, and I have come here today with Andrew Prakachik and Ruby DeBellis to advocate on behalf of our university to receive this funding. Andrew and I are Morris's Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition representatives, and Ruby is our student vice president and the government relations coordinator for the Student Senate. And as you know, the Greater Minnesota Academic Renewal will fund projects on the Morris, Duluth, and Crookston campuses, and we are here to advocate for this request and tell you how important it is for the Morris campus to receive this funding. First, you'll hear from Andrew on the renovation of Blakely Hall, which is one of the two projects that this request would fund on the Morris campus.
Andrew, welcome.
Hello, my name is Andrew Prakachik. I'm a third-year management and economics major, and I'm from Staples, Minnesota. As Autumn mentioned, I am one of Morris's MSLC representatives, and I'm here to talk about the renovation to Blakely Hall, which would create state-of-the-art classrooms for our education department. Currently at Morris, all of our education classes are held in an old, outdated, and inaccessible building on campus. Based on the university's facilities condition needs index, the education building is in critical condition and actually rated as our worst building on campus. There is no elevator or ramp to enter the building, and as a result, we've been teaching our students about ideas of diversity, accessibility, and inclusiveness in a building that does not reflect those values. We have recently installed an elevator in Blakely Hall, and it is much better condition than the education building. This renovation would transform the program and create a quality learning environment for Morris students, which would include a curriculum center and an observation room. Morris is a leader in producing top-notch teachers for the state of Minnesota, with 89% of our education students being employed within 1 year of graduation. This funding would be valuable investment in the future education of our K-12 students. Now I'll turn it over to Ruby DeBellis to tell you more about the Humanities Project on Morris.
Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Ruby DeBellis. I'm a fourth-year political science biochemistry major from Bloomington, Minnesota. And I've become very invested in Morris over the last 4 years. I'm graduating soon, so I'm here to tell you about why the renovations to the Humanities is going to be necessary and very important for our university to continue to succeed. So with Morris, we have a core curriculum in which all students have to take at least one class in every discipline. The Humanities building is one of the most used on campus, with 75% of our high-use classrooms, our high-use classrooms being used 75% of the time during the school week from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And according to our University Facility Needs Index, this building is in poor condition. There have been some classrooms have had no renovations since this building opened. That means that there's desks, chairs, curtains, and carpet that are going on 50 years old right now that are still in use every day. There are stained old whiteboards, and specifically our language classrooms lack a lot of technology to keep up with language learning in the 21st century. So all of these Humanities renovations for furniture and classroom updates are very necessary for the Morris campus in this building in particular. And so these updates would be very noticeable on campus, considering that we've had the same ambiance for half a century. We're just here to advocate for the Greater Minnesota Academic Renewal. We know this is only one very small piece of the bonding bill puzzle, but to us it's a very important piece and would definitely ensure that we have keeping up with, you know, the times and the 21st century and keeping up with having a quality education in Morris. So we'd just like to thank you for your time and thank you for hearing us today.
Thank you for coming. I know where Morris is too. And that's a trip. You said you're graduating soon. The other two testifiers, I don't remember where you are in the process.
I'm a junior.
Junior, okay.
And I'm a second year.
Okay, good. Any quick questions from members before we move on? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Who was talking about the Blakely Hall? And your name again?
Andrew Bercacci.
Andrew. So, Andrew, you mentioned that the building is in disrepair, but I note, and you did add an elevator, or you're looking to add an elevator?
The elevator is in Blakely Hall, which is where the new classrooms would be put into in the basement floor. Our current education building does not have an elevator or anything in it.
Okay. I'm just trying to understand, because on the list that's been provided to the committee members for Blakely Hall, you're asking for masonry restoration and HVAC upgrades. That's not what I heard from you.
I believe that is from the HEPA request. The one we are speaking about is the Greater Academic Greater Minnesota Academic Renewal. Which
my mistake. My mistake. Thank you.
All right. All right. If there are no other questions, then we have more testifiers, I believe. Again, welcome. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was remiss in not highlighting the difference between the HEPA and Greater Minnesota Academic Renewal. And as most of the committee members know, to be eligible for HEPA funding, the space needs to be reused for the same purpose. These are spaces that look a lot like HEPA projects, but we want to repurpose the space, so we've identified a separate item outside the HEPA ask for that.
I'm glad you clarified that, yes, I think most were wondering.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now to tell you a little bit about Pillsbury Hall, we have Professor Andrew Elfenbein to begin, and then a student, Zoe Winsel.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Andrew Elfenbein, Chair of the English Department at the University of Minnesota. It has been my privilege to teach in this department for the past 27 years. This is one of the oldest departments in the university, and indeed in the nation. Writers and critics who have become woven into the central fabric of American letters have taught and continue to teach in this department. Proud as I am of my colleagues, I am even more proud of our majors who have gone on to run Minnesota's businesses Executive Vice President at Valspar and DT Nexus, Director of Marketing at Alliance, founders of Magnetic Poetry and Caldrea Products, manage Minnesota's money, directors and vice presidents of U.S. Bank and Wells Fargo, watch its health, CEO of Hazelden, and senior directors at Medtronic and United Health, guard its spiritual life, faith leaders in Minneapolis and St. Paul, teach its children, and the past 5 years, two of Minnesota's outstanding teachers have been former English majors, and invigorate its cultural life. Countless majors fuel the publishing world that has made Minnesota famous throughout the country. I should also add that our majors include not only Minnesota's poet laureate and an Olympic bronze medalist, but also a part owner of the Timberwolves. Minnesota has done spectacularly well by the department that I am lucky to chair. Over 50 years ago, this premier department was moved into supposedly temporary housing, tucked away in miscellaneous space in a building that states in imposing stone letters, College of Engineering. There, as I have said, its accomplishments have been impressive. Yet as plans for English to have a home of its own have come together, I have been struck by how widespread the excitement has been. Rarely have I seen so many people from so many different backgrounds so energized about what could be if Pillsbury Hall were renovated. Our majors are excited to imagine a space where they can study in up-to-date classrooms, actually find professors without needing the campus equivalent of a GPS, and study together. Yet it's more than just English majors. At last, other departments in the humanities will be able to find us. All the arts departments know that Pillsbury Hall will have a lecture theater space that will be available to house performances. And with the English department out of Lind Hall, the College of Science and Engineering can reclaim hundreds of feet of classroom space, allowing it to expand dramatically its offerings in computer science. The humanities, the arts, and the sciences all need this renovation to reach their full potential. Right now, Pillsbury, one of the most striking buildings on campus, sits empty. The antiquated labs look as if Victor Frankenstein had just left. And I know the outdated lecture rooms from personal experience. I spent all September yelling above the noise of a stationary mechanical fan, the room's only ventilation, while my students craned their necks around the many large pillars supporting the roof in order to see the board. The money now being used for the upkeep of unused space can, after renovation, be used as it should be to support the university's educational mission. The university has done well by its renovations. Walter Library was transformed from a dingy cave into a breathtaking learning area, and Tate has been beautifully redesigned for earth sciences. With Pillsbury, the university has found the perfect use for this beautiful building and the 6,000 students who take classes in English every year. This renovation is supported not only by the university, but also by Minnesota's major tech companies, the arts organizations in which our majors have internships, the leaders of major presses in Minnesota that employ our majors, Republican and Democratic legislators, the local press, the historical preservation community, and prominent community leaders. Minnesota has done exceptionally well by the English department. Help us to continue to do our best work by letting us reimagine a 19th century building for the 21st century. Thank you.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yep. Hello, my name is Zoe Wenzel, and I'm a sophomore computer science major at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities. I'm here today to also support the Pillsbury Project, a project whose impact will not just affect English and liberal arts, but also the College of Science and Engineering. My journey at the U began when I was a senior in high school, searching for the opportunity to extend my education. Among other courses, I took an introductory computer science class and discovered that it was my passion. And it was because of that class and that professor that I'm currently at the U. When I asked that professor about my different college choices, he told me, "You will succeed anywhere, but the U will give you access to opportunities that would be difficult to get elsewhere. And opportunities are exactly what I have received. All of my classes, computer science and otherwise, have been engaging and impactful. The professors are top-notch, and the quality of education cannot be debated. But it is the community and the support that has always stood out to me. Starting my first semester, I became a teaching assistant for the very same class that convinced me to go to the U. It gave me the opportunity to become part of the computer science community while simultaneously guiding it. Following my freshman year, I was given the honor to do paid research in developing computer science languages with another computer science professor, and possibly have yet another research opportunity for this summer. This is a chance that can really only be gained at a research institution like the U. Computer science and engineering as a whole are known for being majors of the future. But here at the U, they give you the very real possibility of shaping the present as well. You see, my story is not unique, but that is why I think it is so important. Across campus, computer science and engineering students are given opportunities that will shape the very campus we thrive in, who we are, and how we will change the world. But there's a problem. As interest in my major and other science and engineering disciplines continue to expand at a rapid rate, space has become an issue. I want more students to have the opportunities that I have been given, and that is why I'm here, to support just that possibility. The Pillsbury Project would allow computer science and engineering to expand more into Lind Hall, a building conveniently located in the heart of the other College of Science and Engineering buildings. It would give computer science the room it needs for classrooms and collaborative learning spaces, while providing a first-ever permanent home for industrial and systems engineering. I urge you all to strongly consider the importance of the Pillsbury Project as building for opportunity, both for English and liberal arts and for science and engineering students across the campus. With your support, we can give a very real name to possibility. Thank you.
Thank you. President Taylor, anyone else here to testify in regards to the Pillsbury building?
No, sir, Mr. Chair.
I just look at the picture that's in your handout or your presentation. That looks like a tile roof on there?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair, it is a tile roof.
Yeah. Slate? Yeah. That's a good roof.
It served us well for a long time, Mr. Chair.
I only point that out because their state hospital in Fergus Falls had that at one time, and they put asphalt on it. Not a good decision. So, anyway, off the subject a little. Any questions from members? Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your presentation and to all the testifiers. I went to the university. It's a beautiful campus. Absolutely, we should be maintaining it. Just a couple questions. I was reading through some notes, and it looks like in 2016 in February, there was a U of M assistant VP who said the administration should be spending twice as much as it's currently spending on maintenance and capital costs. That was 2 years ago. I'm just wondering if since that time there has been a look to or more investment in the administration putting more money into capital. And then the second question would be, is there a, and this is actually one of the regents mentioned, I was looking at the regent meeting minutes, that they were concerned about where to allocate capital funding requests without a strategic plan in place, because it's my understanding, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that actually almost one-third of the buildings at the U are either in poor or critical condition. So is there a strategic plan system-wide for upgrading and maintaining your facilities?
Mr. Chair, Representative Whalen, thank you. And to the dollar amount, there is approximately $4 billion in deferred maintenance at the University of Minnesota over our 29 million square feet. We bring a request to you of $200 million in balance between what we believe is politically feasible and has a chance to be made operational. And not the total need, which we don't think the state of Minnesota would issue $4 billion in funding for HEPR in a single year. So we have a great deal of effort at measuring facility conditions and prioritizing where those investments should go. We do that on a campus-wide basis. Again, the bonding HEPA list that you have has the most important projects on each campus, and then those are compared internally with between the campuses. So there's a careful balancing of those intercampus needs.
Can I add something? I'd like to add to that.
Yes, go ahead.
In terms of strategic plan, there has been a plan for how renovations would work. Physics needed a new building. It received a new building. That its previous building was renovated. Board of Sciences, which used to be in Pillsbury. They've moved out of Pillsbury, which is now empty. The idea was we would then move into that space. So there has been a sequencing of need and renovation with particular departments in mind.
Representative Wheeler.
Thank you for that follow-up. And I apologize, I may be, because I asked two questions at once, it was hard to weed through that. So my understanding is there's somewhat of a plan, and I completely receive your response that there's priorities, but my sense is from your response there's not an actual system-wide strategic plan. Would that be correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Whalen, there is not a formal system-wide strategic plan. We have a connector plan. We have a plan that it shows how campuses can interact with respect to each other, but we are now in the midst of fleshing out a full-scale system-wide strategic plan. Each of the individual campuses, which operate with a great deal of autonomy and have different niches in the higher education ecosystem, have strategic plans.
One more question.
Yep, just the
Willard.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that follow-up. Then just going back to the first question that I had asked, which this actually comes from the Senate's Committee on Finance and Planning report from 2016 in February, where an assistant vice P noted the administration should be spending twice as much as it currently does to maintain university facilities. And I'm just wondering, do you know if any action has been taken on the university's end to increase what you're putting into maintaining facilities?
Chair Nornes, Representative Whalen, the principal by far way for us to fund depreciated deferred maintenance is through HEPA. We have a relatively small amount of money, $9 or $10 million, in our operating budget that we use really for emergency repair and replacement, but we rely on the state's allocation of HEPA for the principal maintenance of our buildings.
We have but another testifier?
We do.
All right.
That's me, Mr. Chair. Dan Hartman, the executive director of Glensheen, was unable to leave Duluth today, so I will very briefly mention the Glensheen Capital Renewal project that we have. Here we are requesting $4 million in state funding, which we will match with $4 million of funding from other sources in order to create an $8 million investment in Glensheen, which will stabilize current structures and minimize additional deterioration. And so, Mr. Chair, with that, I thank you for the opportunity for our students and faculty to tell you our stories and why requests for renewal is so critical to the future teaching, learning, research, and outreach of our University of Minnesota. This request for renewal reflects our land-grant mission and demonstrates our fiscal responsibility. As you can tell, we are focused on addressing the oldest pieces of our 29 million square feet of space, providing our students, our faculty, and all Minnesotans a world-class university conducting its work and its service in 21st century facilities. Thank you again for listening, and I would be happy to respond to any additional questions you or the committee have for me.
All right. Thank you for your presentation. Thank you for the snacks, wherever they went. Any questions of members? There's no question that it's all, I mean, you've laid out a pretty good plan. We understand what we have ahead of us to see if we can respond in a positive way.
Mr. Chair, thank you. We appreciate your consideration in listening to our stories today.
Right. Again, thanks to all the students that made the trip. All right. We have a little transition here. You can maybe pass the snacks back. You're supposed to, members, you're supposed to take one. Don't just pass it. Sorry for the delay here. Our
cheese is important. Somebody moved my cheese.
our deli is not used to this. So welcome to our Higher Education Committee. And I guess, Chancellor, you're the first one up. Is that correct?
Yes.
By the way, congratulate you on your position in the new contract.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Now you can begin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Chair Nonis, members of the committee. I'm Devinder Malhotra, and I have the privilege and honor to serve as the Chancellor for Minnesota State. Seated with me today from Century College are Michael Byrne, Vice President of Academic Affairs, Century College, Scott Simonson, Faculty in ITT and Director of the Fab Lab, Century College, and Catherine Lang, Student and President of the Century College Engineering Student Club. Also joining us in the audience are members of the Minnesota State Board of Trustees, Trustee Don Erlinson and Trustee Louis Sundin. There are also two presidents in the audience, and I would like to recognize them, Joyce Esther, president of Normandale Community College, and Faith Hensrud, president of Bemidji State University and Northwest Technical College. In the audience also is Vice Chancellor of Finance and Facilities, Laura King. And then also there are some leaders from our faculty and staff bargaining units and student associations here. You will also hear later from my partner in crime for these hearings, Associate Vice Chancellor Brian Yolitz. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, your support for Minnesota State is sincerely appreciated, and we are honored to have the opportunity to tell our story on behalf of Minnesota State's 375,000 students and 16,000 employees. We're also grateful to Governor Dayton for his strong support of public higher education, asset preservation, and Minnesota State in his recommended 2018 capital program. Having served at two of our campuses, I have experienced firsthand what you already know, and that is your investments can literally change the lives of students and transform the communities where our colleges and universities are located. I would like to ask you to look at page 3 of the bonding book that highlights who our students are and the fact that we serve over 63,000 students of color, 48,500 first-generation students, 84,000 low-income students, and 10,000 veterans and service members. We have a heightened focus on student success. We have aligned to meet the workforce needs, and indeed, we are the economic engine for the state of Minnesota. Providing the talent Minnesota needs is at the core of everything we do as a system. Our physical infrastructure and our proposed projects are meeting the community needs, and the impact of these projects is felt by each and every student who has the opportunity to learn within these walls and who indeed will create and drive the Minnesota's future. The requested capital program reflects our board's capital investment priorities for the 2018 session. The capital program is the result of a rigorous process which starts with an ongoing comprehensive facilities planning that occurs at each campus. In preparation for this legislative session, our board established guidelines outlining their focus and expectations. Specifically, they sought a capital program with an academic focus, one that demonstrates good stewardships and takes care of the space we have and need, while minimizing new square footage and making spaces flexible for the future. All projects went through an intensive scoring process where representatives from our colleges and universities reviewed and assessed all campus projects against the board's guidelines. Over the past few months, our campuses have hosted over 50 visits, which many of you attended, along with your colleagues from the Capital Investment Committee and MMB. We sincerely appreciate your time to see firsthand the integral role Minnesota State colleges and universities play in communities across the state. The investments made are more than just brick and mortar. These investments transform how our faculty teach, how our staff support our students, and most importantly, how our students learn and gain the skills and education to become the future Minnesota aspires to be. I would now like to turn it over to my colleagues from Century College.
Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'll try my teacher voice. It's been a few years.
Sounds good.
I'm Michael Barrett, and I serve as the Vice President of Academic Affairs at Century College. On behalf of Century College and the other colleges and universities in the Minnesota State system, I want to thank you for all that you've done to support our students and to support the faculty and staff who serve them. We are especially grateful for the investment that you made in our facilities as part of the 2014 bonding, which allowed us to redesign Century's Innovation Center and Digital Fabrication Laboratory, which has enhanced our engineering, ECAD, additive and digital manufacturing, and orthotics and prosthetics programs. All of those have been materially benefited from the redesigned Fab Lab. Our Engineering and Applied Technology Center requests and the many other capital requests at our campuses are, as the Chancellor said, more than brick and mortar. They are about creating opportunities for our students, supporting employers, and investing in our local economies. And the two others next to me can speak much more to that than I can, so I'm going to turn it over to Instructor Simonson to explain more about the value our Fab Lab has for our students in the North Bend.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. On behalf of the students and my colleagues at Century College, we'd like to thank you for your support in higher education programs and projects like our Fab Lab. Century College Engineering and Fab Lab.
I need you to identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. Scott Simonson, Director of the Engineering Fab Lab.
Okay, sorry to interrupt.
All right. The Century College Engineering Fab Lab has been transformative for students. In addition to working with MIT, it has allowed us to work directly with regional organizations, including the University of Minnesota, 3M, Innovyze, Madness Heights Development Corporation, and numerous other organizations in the region. Century was the first Fab Lab in the region. For over 12 years, we have assisted in the implementation of Fab Labs and organizations in high schools. We have been directly involved with the International Fab Foundation and have participated in numerous national and global initiatives. One of our international students, Abu Adam, came to Century College and enrolled in our engineering program. He was a high school student when I first met him in 2008, and his dream was to come to the United States and get an engineering education, which he accomplished. 3 years ago, Dr. Neil Gershenfeld from MIT invited Abu to attend the World Economic Summit in Geneva, Switzerland, and present on the economic impacts of digital fabrication and fab labs. Pretty amazing for a student from a two-year college in Minnesota to be invited by an MIT professor to participate in a global summit. The Fab Lab is a modern working laboratory where students, faculty, community, and business members come to learn and innovate primarily using digital systems. Our Fab Lab has the latest in laser machines common in today's business. We have the only center for 3D printing in the region and are collaborating currently with the University of Minnesota on a bioprinting DOD-sponsored national initiative. One of our students, Michael Fisher, completed a summer internship last year with a company called Innovize, a local company where he developed the template for setting up and collaborating and calibrating laser machines. The company projected that his ideas saves the company somewhere around $50,000 annually by implementing his processes. They were thrilled with four students that participated in a summer internship. It is our hope to expand the digital fab lab and implement an applied advanced engineering center focusing on robotics, automation, artificial intelligence, and the emerging fields of virtual and augmented reality. Some of you may have seen the recent news clip on Channel 4 a week ago highlighting the Sophia Robotics event we hosted. Giving exposure early in their educational careers to amazing advances in technology, including robotics, has really fired them up. It encourages our students to complete and finish their degrees and to either seek employment in the region or go on for further education. The new Fab Lab space we hope to build will help us expand our mission of educating students, further improving the economies by the region by creating workers prepared not only in meeting today's business needs, but also to lead advances in manufacturing, healthcare, business, and education. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And now I'd like to introduce Catherine, who's a student at Century and the president of our engineering association, and she would like to make a couple of comments about how the Fab Lab and advanced manufacturing has encouraged her at Century.
Welcome to the committee, and state your name, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Catherine Lang, and I am currently an aerospace engineering student at Century College. I am also a tutor for the Introduction to Engineering class and president of the Engineering Club. Throughout my academic career at Century, I have become well acquainted with the Fab Lab. I have participated in projects for the Minnesota Space Grant Consortium and Xcel Energy, in which I have used the Fab Lab extensively. Additionally, the Fab Lab has provided an excellent location for collaboration. The connections the other students and I have made with each other, with faculty, and with other entrepreneurs and innovators are irreplaceable. By working in the Fab Lab, my fellow students and I have gained experience using modeling software, 3D printers, laser cutters, and many other powerful tools related to engineering, ECAD technology, and additive and digital manufacturing. As a tutor and president of the Engineering Club, I assist other students in learning how to use these tools. These skills, or the skills and knowledge required or acquired from working in the Fab Lab, are not only practical, but absolutely crucial to meet the growing needs of the technology. Since I am in the lab every day, I see the connections students build with each other. It often happens that a student who is unfamiliar with the equipment or software will find a more experienced student and ask for help. It is not long before this once inexperienced student is now sharing their newfound knowledge with another student. It is this kind of teamwork that cannot be taught in a classroom setting. The students utilizing the Fab Lab are gaining technical skills that will carry them far in their careers, but they are also learning liberal arts skill sets like collaborative communication that allows engineers, engineering drafters, and additive manufacturers to work together and advance society as a whole. These are the innovators and creators being shaped in the Century College Fab Lab. They are one example of how Minnesota's investments in our colleges and universities support student learning in our economy by preparing tomorrow's workforce. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lang. Questions from members? Representative Haley.
Thank you, Chair Norris, and thank you for your testimony. I have perhaps maybe more of a comment or an observation than a question, but I just wanted to throw it out for my fellow committee members. I'm a big fan of when we can leverage public and private dollars. And another initiative that we're working on in K-12 education is VPSEO, vocational PSEO. And you know, we won't have the resources to create necessarily a fab lab or 3D printing labs in all of our high schools. So we're going to need to look to you to make sure those kids can get some of those experiences in high school and leverage, you know, what you have. So I just wanted to kind of point that out. So putting money in one place can help the whole continuum down the chain. And I think we need to think that way as we're thinking about education in the future and making sure kids get these skills. And I'd like to tour.
I was going to ask Ms. Lang, you said aerospace. It's, you know, we have students that have been here who are going to be lawyers and a variety of things, but I think you're the first one that said aerospace is part of their goal here.
Yes.
I'm just curious what that goal is. What are the opportunities out there that you're seeking? It seems like a very vast, you know, you talk about opportunity, it's big.
Well, Mr. Chair, my main interest is in autonomous vehicles. I've spent a great amount of time learning about drones. I actually did a drone project through Century and the Minnesota Space Grant Consortium that was funded by NASA, where we built a drone and we competed it against other schools in the area, and we tied for first with another team from Century. Since then, I have presented for MAV Meetup in the Twin Cities, which is a leading group in drones and autonomous vehicles, and also for the drone conference in Fargo, North Dakota. So I would like to pursue that kind of technology and engineering.
I have a drone myself, but I have no degree, no experience. It's sitting in my office safe. Someday I may fly it as a gift anyway. Representative Bernardi, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention to our testifier that tomorrow at the Capitol, from 9:30 to 3, we have autonomous shuttle demonstration at the Capitol. And then also the governor is announcing a new advisory committee on connected and autonomous vehicles. Automated. I think it's automated vehicles.
Okay, thank you.
So you might want to apply for that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? If not, Chancellor, you have some closing comments.
Chair Norris.
A lot of time, you don't have to close. If you've got a lot of things to say, you get plenty of time. So.
Yes. Chair Norris, members of the committee, now I would like to invite Associate Vice Chancellor Brian Yolitz, who will provide you with some of the details associated with our capital request.
Okay, very good. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Mr. Chair and committee, good afternoon. My name is Brian Yolitz. I serve as the Minnesota State College University System as Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities. I'll provide an overview of the capital request that you see before you. I'll use the slide deck that you have in your packets and also use the bonding book as a guide for some of our discussions over the next several slides or so. Minnesota State seeks your support in executing a $224 million capital program this legislative session. This program's top priority is asset preservation, taking care of the spaces that we have in need today and into the future. We seek $130 million to address the most pressing asset preservation needs at our colleges and university campuses through HEPR. In addition, there are 15 major capital projects within the program that meet student success and workforce needs in 16 communities around the state of Minnesota. These projects renovate over 500,000 square feet of space and ultimately eliminate some 75,000 square feet of obsolete space and the negative impact that area has on our campus operating budgets. Our $130 million request for HEBR is our number one capital priority of our colleges and universities and of our Board of Trustees. It represents our stewardship responsibility and commitment to taking care of the academic space we already have and the space we need. It focuses on keeping our students, faculty, and staff warm, safe, and dry. over 50% of our request addresses academic building exteriors, including the roofs, windows, and the wall surfaces. Another 30% upgrade deteriorating HVAC and electrical systems. The balance updates academic spaces to include meeting health, safety, accessibility standards, utility tunnel upgrades, and designing for future asset preservation work. The projects that you see highlighted on pages 10 through 14 of your capital bonding book are what our individual institution presidents and their leadership teams have identified as the most pressing asset preservation needs of their institutions. The age and condition of our academic buildings is why our request is $130 million and is the largest to date, and why it makes up the largest part of our capital request. Two-thirds of our academic buildings are over 40 years of age or older. Over half of the space was built between 1960 and 1980, a period of time known for its flash construction, where we built stuff relatively fast with lower quality materials and where energy efficiency and sustainability were second thoughts. Many of these buildings and their components are reaching or have reached the end of their useful lives. Minnesota State has prioritized HEPR as its number one priority since its inception in 1995. Recent biennial requests for HEPR have been $110 million for a two-year period. However, actual HEPR funding has tapered off over the last several years. As a result, the backlog of maintenance, the cost of those major facility systems and components that have exceeded their useful life has jumped by more than 46%. Your colleagues on the Capital Investment Committee heard about this issue from our students, from faculty and staff during their tours last fall, as they toured many of our campuses, as Chancellor Malhotra outlined. They heard loud and clear of the urgency of need and how important HEPR funding is to our colleges and universities, and how the condition of our facilities directly impacts the teaching and learning environments of our campuses and their ability to fully meet and service the communities in the entire state of Minnesota. Behind HEPR is, in our request, are 15 major capital projects that come to you through our capital development process that Chancellor Malhotra outlined. These begin with campus-based planning that develops individual campus comprehensive facilities plans. Those are the strategic plans for capital investments on our individual institutions. They're integrated at our system, at the system level, through guidelines presented or developed by our Board of Trustees, and ultimately forwarded to you for consideration. As Chancellor Malhotra identified, we had some over $200 million worth of requests for capital investment as individual projects, and we advanced only $94 million of those as they met the most pressing needs and met the strategic intent of our Board of Trustees. The process that brought those projects to you included a series of metrics at our campuses, including enrollment and demographic trends, the age and condition of our facilities and the backlog of the maintenance at those facilities, the space utilization and energy consumption and costs of those facilities, as well as past campus investments in our buildings. The scoring process, we also made sure that we took advantage of past investments, and you'll see at the top of our capital projects at Bemidji State University, Rochester Community College, and at MSU Mankato, where prior design monies have invested in prior bonding bills, and those we seek to move forward through construction. Now I'd ask you to turn to your bonding book and turn to page 13 as I'll walk through some, in priority order, the individual capital projects at our campuses in terms of investments that are built at facilities to enhance the educational opportunities at those campuses. So you'll see on the left side of page 13 is our number two capital priority, our number one behind HEPR, and the number one of President Hensrud, who's in our audience with us this afternoon. It's the $22.5 million academic learning project at Bemidji State University that is a transformative project for that institution. It renovates five campus buildings and replaces the obsolete Hague Sauer Hall with an academic learning center. This project impacts space for 12 academic departments, and when done, will enhance the academic experience of nearly every student who attends Bemidji State University. This project will also reduce the backlog of maintenance at that institution by nearly $10 million. Also on page 13 is the project at Rochester Community and Technical College that replaces obsolete spaces of Memorial and Plaza Halls with an addition to Endicott Hall with a smaller footprint of space, and replaces the outdated chiller plant for the campus at the institution. This project will also reduce deferred maintenance by $5.2 million at Rochester Community College. Turning to pages 14 and 15, going left to right, you'll see capital priority number 4, the Clinical Sciences Phase 2 project at MSU Mankato. This project impacts 5 academic departments and renovates spaces in 3 campus buildings vacated when the programs moved to the new Clinical Sciences building funded for construction in 2014. This project also installs solar panels on the new Clinical Sciences building to enhance sustainability and renewable energy programs at the institution. At capital priority number 5 is a request for design for future renovation work at the Coon Rapids campus of Anoka Ramsey Community College to support nursing and business programs at that institution. You heard a great deal about the impact at Century College, and this project at capital priority number 6 just builds upon that. It enhances programs including computer science, engineering, robotics, additive digital technology. I want to make sure I got that one right. Is that correct?
Additive digital manufacturing.
I'll get that. I'm working on that. We appreciate that. At the college, it enhances what you heard about the Fab Lab and is a force multiplier for that institution. At number 7, President Esther wants to make sure that you understand the importance of the project at Normandale College, which is the first step in renovating student service and support spaces at an institution. This project ultimately impacts 35 academic departments, renovates over 30 classrooms and labs when it's completely executed, and removes some $3 million worth of backlog of maintenance at the institution, and better aligns the entrance to that facility to make it more inviting to students as they come to campus. At MSU Moorhead, the design request of $628,000 helps MSU Moorhead renovate Well Hall, the oldest, most distinguished building on campus, and also home of Glenn's Rudd Auditorium. Brookdale will improve classrooms, labs, and the performance space, and ultimately remove some $8 million worth of backlog of maintenance in that facility. Nearly $700,000 is requested for Inver Hills Community College to begin design work for the Technology and Business Center at that institution. That would prepare for a capital construction request in 2020. But this renovation work will ultimately enhance STEM programs at the institution and enhance pathways for students seeking four-year degrees in business and accounting that could be accommodated on that institution's campus. Capital priority number 10 at Riverland Community and Technical College renovates spaces to support the movement of the truck driving and collision program from Albert Lee campus, or correction, from the Austin campus to Albert Lee. And when the Capital Investment Committee was there, they heard exactly as Representative Haley talked about, the cry for integrated technical programs just like these from the local industry leaders. We had a long discussion about that, about how important it is the technical programs are in terms of having the right education that starts and the seeds are planted in middle school and carried through high school into the higher ed campuses, just like at Riverland Community College. At capital priority number 11 is the request to renovate and upgrade spaces to support affordable academic programming within the Twin Cities metropolitan area at our college campuses. This work upgrades academic and student support spaces at Minneapolis Community and Technical College, Normandale Community College, and North Hennepin Community College to deliver baccalaureate education within the walls of existing footprint of our colleges, enabling students to achieve a four-year degree without ever leaving one of our college campuses. Turning to page 14, you'll see a small but very important project at Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College. Start to Grow will refurbish classrooms and support teacher education programs and student and community support programs at that institution. It also removes an outdated building in the back of the facility and ultimately save about $40,000 or $4,000 a year in energy costs from that old dilapidated building. At St. Paul College, capital priority number 13 would seek design funding to build upon the success of the addition that recently completed there and renovate spaces and bring those up to par to serve the ever-growing, diverse, and complex community at St. Paul College. On East Grand Forks campus of Northland Community and Technical College, renovation work will upgrade teaching and learning labs for the medical and technical programs so important to the Northwest region of the state of Minnesota. At Vermilion Community College in Ely, Minnesota, priority number 15, upgrade core classroom and support spaces on the campus, as well as the main building entrance to help enhance accessibility. This small project has a major impact on a strong but vibrant campus in the Iron Range. And finally, a request for design funding at Central Lakes, the Brainerd Lake campus, to begin design work to renovate student service and academic sports spaces in the core of their Brainerd campus main building and bring that, enhance the ability to serve students, particularly first-generation students, to that institution. Putting it all together, this program touches 48 of our 54 campuses in every region of our state. The green dots are the 32 campuses that would benefit directly from HEPR projects within the $130 million requested. The blue dots reflect campuses that would benefit from HEPR work within the $130 million request, but also from the individual projects we just reviewed as line item capital requests. To recap, Minnesota State seeks your support in executing a $224 million capital program this session. The top priority is asset preservation through $130 million in HEPR funding. In addition, there are 15 capital priority projects at 15 institutions within our system. Those are focused on student success and workforce needs. There are many elements to this program in terms of academic programming, but they're all focused on two simple things: student success and good stewardship. We thank you for your time and attention this afternoon, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right, thank you. That has to be a monumental task to prioritize a system as big as Minnesota State. Questions? Comments? Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Yeltsin, could you explain on the projects, not on the HEPR, of course, the impact that has on tuition when you handle a debt service?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, indeed, Minnesota State is responsible for one-third of the debt service. And when you track that, I don't have the exact numbers in there, but I believe it's a penny on the dollar or in that range is made up when you take a look at operating budget and account for tuition. It's about a penny on the dollar for tuition that a student pays that goes towards debt service. And recall that we're only paying a third of the debt service of the entire capital request.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Yolitz, there was discussion a week ago at the Interfaculty Organization Dinner on this topic, and in 2013 and 2014, Representative Hausman and I had also begun a discussion, because she was chairing capital investment, on removing this provision. It had been instituted at another time, and frankly, its purpose now is exactly in contradiction to what it was initially intended to do. And with tuition and debt where it is, I'm not asking for an opinion on this, but what would, and maybe the chancellor would like to respond, if the legislature seriously considered repealing this provision and taking those costs back on itself, which I think is the more appropriate way to handle those provisions, what impact would that have on Minn State and its projects and its requests?
Chair Nornis, Representative Pulaski, as Associate Vice Chancellor Brian Yolitz pointed out, that right now we bear the third of a cost, but removing those costs, you know, by definition will have some impact on our budgets, because those of our institutions which are planning these projects, they will not have to cover these costs. But I think in the broad scheme of things, I think, as Associate Vice Chancellor Brian Yolitz pointed out, when we plan for these projects, we are much more looking at what is the size and scope of the physical infrastructure we need in order to provide an extraordinary, exceptional, affordable education. And in that context, our focus is mostly on student success and stewardship. Although the debt servicing costs always play a role as any other item in the budget, but that's not the critical driver in developing our request.
Mr. Chair and Chancellor, and Mr. Yost, I'm not saying that it is, but my concern has been that this was instituted at a time for a different purpose, and that purpose no longer really works. And considering what we've gone through with both the Great Recession and then the impacts on tuition and debt, I think this would be one way to at least ease some of that burden and take on a responsibility that the legislature once had and I think should have again. I'm not saying to make it any way impact how you're going to prioritize or anything else. I'm looking at this long term as something that we did once, we should do again, and we should revisit things that we put in place for one reason. And obviously, that reason isn't working anymore, and we should revise it. And some of these responsibilities should be the and I think this is one that should be the responsibility of the legislature.
Chair Nornis, Representative Pawlowski, my colleague here at the table thinks that he has an answer for you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, I don't have an answer, but I do understand that you know, the debt service is an ongoing discussion. I think it would be something we'd be very interested in having a conversation on. We would be concerned, though, how that would impact you know, investments in Minnesota State in terms of our capital investments, and you know, if we are responsible for net, or if the state carries the full 100%, would that impact how much of a capital program we could execute in any given legislative session? So that would be, I guess, a caution from my perspective, and that would be something for you to deal with. But certainly we'd be interested in a conversation around how that all works. And
Mr. Chair, Mr. Yolitz, I agree, because I think now we're getting to what the initial intent was, and that didn't play out considering what happened, events with the Great Recession and other things. But I think it is a discussion that it is not only a worthy one, but I think some of us are going to continue to pursue it because it's now coming at us from the campus level. And it is a topic worthy of pursuit. And I think in the long run it would help the system and the students.
All right. Any other questions from members? Okay. At this point then, Chancellor, do you want to have any final comments?
Thank you. Chair Nornis, members of the committee, we truly appreciate your support for higher education, public higher education, and also your past support and your current support with regard to our capital requests. These are indeed, as we said, the impact goes beyond the bricks and mortar. It really helps us keep our students warm, safe, and dry, and at the same time enables us to create a learning landscape where our students can thrive and then ultimately the communities in which they'll work and live will progress. Thank you again.
Thank you for your presentation and thank you for being here. I would just ask members if you have a comment or some opinion on what we've talked about here today from both university and Minnesota State. You can talk to me offline, communicate your feelings, ideas, and then we'll move forward from there. So with that, members, I believe we're at the end of our committee. We're adjourned.